We know that Dr. North is a retired Air Force chaplain, retired as a lieutenant colonel. But I'm not sure all of you know the fact that he has royalty. He is both King of the North, good King of the North, and he's also King James. I could tell you some stories about Dr. North. I could also tell you some stories about Dr. Baldwin. So I'm not going to do it here, though, but you can ask me in class. Last week, Michaela sang It Took a Miracle. And of course, you remember the words in that song that the greatest miracle of all is God's recycling, to use Elder Halverson's words. When he saved my soul, cleansed and made me whole, is the greatest miracle of all. One of the most important things we can do as Christians is to testify to those miracles, to let others know about the good things that God has done in our lives and is doing. Just as Jesus told the demoniac in the scripture reading, he says, declare. You remember the demoniac wanted to go with Jesus? He said, no, you need to go home and declare how much God has done for you. And he went away proclaiming throughout the whole city how much Jesus had done for him. That was a testimony given quite often in the early church. I did a study on the expression asa epoes en theos in Bible Works. And I found a number of passages. I want to share two of them with you. Following the first missionary journey, we read in Acts 14:27, and when they arrived, they gathered the church together and declared all that God had done. Amen. This is important. They couldn't refrain from reporting the good things that God had done. And then at their arrival at the first general conference session in Jerusalem, Acts 15, verse 4, when they came to Jerusalem, they were welcomed by the church and the apostles and the elders, and they declared all that God had done. I was 5 years old when my mother became an Adventist. It was a decision my dad violently opposed. He tore up Bible correspondence lessons that came into the home. He ripped covers off of Ellen G. White's books. Dad was about my height, thin, wiry man, very hard worker, honest, a man of few words, and no time for sentimentality. His own father had been killed by a runaway horse when he was 7, and he was brought up by a hard-drinking, tyrannical grandfather, and it took its toll on my dad. Mom, on the other hand, just 5 feet tall, was brought up in a very happy, large family, and she had a completely different outlook on life. I was to learn later that Dad was actually a very religious person at heart. But there was no way in the world he was going to accept a church that worshiped on Saturday. Those were the days when Adventist married women took off their wedding rings. And when Mom took off her ring, as far as Dad was concerned, she had ended the marriage. He did not leave home, but to my 5-year-old mind, he had left home in spirit. Mom took my two brothers and me to Sabbath school and church every Sabbath under tremendous tension. I was always afraid when we came home. I didn't know what was going to be in store, especially on communion Sabbaths when the little church there in San Luis Obispo didn't let out until 12:30, 12:45. Those were always very fearful days. Sabbath school, I remember, included memory verses. We learned every memory verse, and then on 13th Sabbath, we'd be paraded out to the adult Sabbath school to recite all of the memory verses, every quarter. We also memorized the Ten Commandments, the 23rd Psalm, the Beatitudes, 1 Corinthians 13, Revelation 14. And we were given little colored ribbons with the passage printed on it, like this. This says, the law of God. This was given to me in the 40s. It was also important for us to know the Sabbath school lesson, although it was hard at home to do that because of Dad's interference. In those first few years of Adventist life, Dad's opposition to the church remained very strong. But I began to see little clues that he was mellowing. His language was not as harsh. He did not walk away when a church member came to the house. And on Sunday mornings, when the Voice of Prophecy came on, HMS Richards and the King's Herald at 8:30, Dad stopped being in the house and let Mom listen to the Voice of Prophecy. Because for a long time, he made sure he was in there to keep the radio off. But when he started letting Mom listen to the Voice of Prophecy, it was clear that things were changing. As a youngster, though, to my young mind, I thought that there were times when Mom perhaps could have been a little maybe yielding at times to some of Dad's demands, and give in just now and then anyway, or in a small way. But Mom said, son, your dad does not respect compromise. And even though he fights against us and the church, he respects conviction. Years passed, and I wondered if Mom's persistence was going to pay off. Then something very dramatic happened. When I was 12, let me give you a little background. The year before, I was in sixth grade, and there were three elementary schools in San Luis Obispo, and we had a little league. We played against each other in baseball, basketball, and football. And because we played football in the autumn, I didn't get to go to the games on Friday because the sun went down too early. This was very disappointing to me because I was the quarterback and the team captain, and the coach made it very clear that he thought that maybe the church was a little bit too rigid on this sundown policy. But I had no questions about the correctness of Sabbath observance. But nevertheless, as an 11-year-old, I started feeling a little bit of resentment. This was also a time when I started noticing the fact that I was the only boy my age in the Sabbath school. In fact, there was only another girl in the Sabbath school about my age, and back then she seemed a little kooky. So I was losing interest in going to Sabbath school and church as a 12-year-old. And then this dramatic occurrence on a Sabbath morning, Mom was getting ready for Sabbath school and church, never said a word to me, and was getting ready to go when all of a sudden the bedroom door opened and Dad said, "Don't you know what time it is? You better be getting up." I couldn't believe what I was hearing. Dad was telling me to go to church. And I did. I didn't want to, but I did. There was no way, after all Mom had been through, that I was going to let her down. And so I went to church, continued going to church from Sabbath after Sabbath. And I graduated from the eighth grade. This Bible was given to me. And at the church, there was talk about me going away to Monterey Bay Academy. The academy had just opened in 1949, and I didn't see how in the world I could ever afford academy, but my mother and my Uncle Russell, my mother's brother, who had studied with Mom to bring her into the Adventist Church, urged me to go. So in 1950, I began my schooling at Monterey Bay Academy in the second year they were open. I was there for 2.5 years. That in itself is quite a story, but let me tell you a couple of things because of how they impact the direction of my life. I worked about 30 hours a week, sometimes more, on two jobs, construction and washing pots and pans, which I hated, to try and keep my bill paid. I couldn't keep up. In those days, as a freshman and sophomore, you get 42, 43 cents an hour, And a meal cost me 80 cents. One meal cost nearly 2 hours' work. I had a friend, Bob Yates, slender guy, taller than I was, but he at lunch had his meals came to $1.20. There's no way in the world I could ever eat the kind of food this guy was eating. So anyway, it was very, very difficult. And I told Mom and Uncle Russell that I did not want to go back for my junior year. And they kept urging me. So that summer, after my sophomore year, I worked pouring concrete. Now, any of you who've poured concrete know that that's hard work. And I poured concrete all summer long, and at the end of the summer, I'd save $700. Came home exhausted, but I had $700. The first statement came out, over half of it was gone. The second statement came out, and it was all gone. And again, I tried to tell Mom and Uncle Russell that I wanted to go home. And they said, no, we'll make it work out. Well, since they were not going to let me go home, I decided to take things into my own hands. And I decided to start doing things that would get me kicked out. Yeah, so you know, it's a crazy plan, but that's what I did. So I went into Watsonville, hitchhiked in there. You were only supposed to go on certain days, and you were supposed to go as a group, boys' day and girls' day, and you'd go by bus. I hitchhiked into Watsonville, and I went to a movie. In those days, going to a movie was really, really bad. And I played around with cigarettes while I was in the cinema. So I'm on my way back now, I'm hitchhiking, and who gives me a ride but the dean's wife? Well, actually, this played right into my plan. So she tells her husband, Dean calls me in, and he says, Larry, I understand you went to town today. Did you have permission? I said, no, sir, I didn't, and I also went to a movie, and I smoked. And I said, and I've been gambling, penny pitching against the wall of the dormitory room. And I said, and I even have a radio, which was also forbidden. The dean couldn't believe it. And he said, well, Larry, he says, we need to go see the principal. So over to the principal's office. D.J. Bieber was the principal. He later became president of Loma Linda University. Some of you may have heard his name. He was the principal then. And he couldn't believe it either. And he said, well, Larry, he says, you've had such a good record. It seems to me that the only thing we can do is to wait for the disciplinary committee to meet in 2 weeks. They'll probably vote to expel you, or you can leave today and leave with a clean record. I said, I'm out of here. And so I called Mom and said that I had been expelled, and she and Uncle Russell immediately wanted to come up and see if they could resolve things, but I told them it was impossible. I said, and so I went home. I got what I wanted, or did I? Before we left the principal's office, this is to show you how valuable Christian education is, Elder Bieber said he'd like to have prayer, and the three of us knelt down. I don't remember the content of that prayer, but I remember I was very touched by it. Here, I had just confessed to breaking all kinds of rules, and this man was putting his arms around me. And I never forgot it. Anyway, I went home, I got a job, I enrolled in the local high school, and that didn't work out, so I dropped out of high school. Nothing seemed to be very rewarding for me. Nothing seemed to have meaning. College sank farther and farther away in my thinking. If I couldn't afford academy, I could never afford college. By now, I had very little to do with the church. Actually, I was disappointed with it. I was disappointed with myself. And I'm sure those church members who had seen me grow up were quite disappointed in me. I took up habits that I knew were wrong, and I had eventually nothing to do with the church whatsoever. 2 months after I turned 18, I joined the United States Air Force. Little did anyone know how God was going to take that sequence of events and turn it into one remarkable blessing. Before leaving home, the church who still cared for me and still prayed for me gave me a little missionary volunteer kit. And in that missionary volunteer kit was this Bible, the entire Bible. It has been with me ever since. It went with me to basic training, to school in the military, over to England. And as I say, it's been with me ever since, one of my most precious possessions, always reminding me that the church still cared for their little boy. It's very, very important to me. After basic training, I went to radio school. The Lord all of a sudden seemed to be involved in this too. I developed an interest in studying. I graduated from radio school with honors. And just before we left to Biloxi, Mississippi, somebody came up to me, I don't even remember who it was, and they said, would you be interested in going to crypto school? I said, what in the world is crypto? And they said, it's the science of encoding and decoding top secret information. Well, that sounded interesting. I said, sure. So away to Belleville, Illinois for cryptography school. And I immersed myself in that. It was very, very enjoyable. And again, the Lord helped me finish that course with honors. And before going overseas to London, where I went for 3 years, I went home for 2 weeks. And as I was saying goodbye to Mom and Dad, I gave Mom a hug. And then I reached over to give Dad a hug. And tears burst down his cheeks. It's the first time we'd ever hugged. He didn't know how to. And when I put my arms around him, it just let loose. And you know, the interesting thing about it was that we never greeted each other or left each other without hugging for the rest of his life. And on the times that I might forget, he made sure we did. He wasn't going to lose that. Anyway, in London, I moved farther and farther from my Adventist upbringing, and Saturday became just another day. I read with very little attention to a comment at the bottom of every one of Mom's letters, "Son, we are praying for you." One day, I got a call from the squadron headquarters telling me that there was a man from Washington, D.C. that would like to see me. So I went over to the office, and here is this elderly gentleman from the War Service Commission, later became the National Service Organization. And this elderly gentleman said he was visiting all of the Adventist servicemen and wanted to know if he could take me to lunch. Sure, he took me to a very nice restaurant in downtown London. And before we separated, he said, "Do you mind if I send to you some church papers?" Well, I didn't want to disappoint the old geezer. He'd been friendly and giving me that meal, so I said, sure, I knew I wasn't going to read them. So I started getting in the mail, though, the Review and Herald and the youth instructor, Forerunner to Insight. And it's true, I never read a one. But every single time they would come in the mail, I was reminded again of the church that cared. It's amazing how these little things can affect you without you even realizing it. But my life really was the life of the fellow in the far country. I had really moved away from everything I knew that was good. But to use Elder Halverson's words again from last week, the recycler was not done with me. So one evening, about 6 o'clock, it was a Friday evening, I was on my way down to Eastcote Arms, to the pub. And I was by myself. Usually I had a buddy or two with me. And as I was walking along the sidewalk, for some unknown reason, I began to reflect about my life. And it dawned on me that every single thing that I had in my life was emptiness. I had every single thing the world had to offer, and it was nothing. I asked myself, is this what I want for the rest of my life? Surely there has to be more to it than this. And I turned around went back to base, got a telephone director out, decided I was going to go to church the next morning. And I found 12 Adventist churches in the London area, something like 12, and I didn't know where any of them was except one. One of them was on Regent Street, the new Gallery Center, because it was near Piccadilly Circus, and every serviceman knew where Piccadilly Circus was. So I went to work that night. I worked the midnight shift. At 7 o'clock in the morning, smelling of tobacco and coffee, still in uniform, I headed for church. I walked into the new Gallery Center, and in the reading room were some evangelistic brochures. You wouldn't believe it. I saw a picture of a man on those brochures that I knew. Elder Elman Falkenberg had preached a sermon while I was at Monterey Bay Academy on the Second Advent. It was the most dramatic and dynamic sermon I have ever heard on the Second Advent to this day. Well, after church service, I made my way back to the back of what had been the front of the church and introduced myself, and he and his wife had me home for lunch and a nice visit, and then I made my way back home. But I was not ready to break yet with my past, and I didn't return to church the following Sabbath. Well, enter again the recycler. This is where the title of my talk comes from. You know, God, Rich, and Poker. I'm telling you, one of the most amazing experiences I have can ever recall occurred to me one Friday night in a poker game. We were there, we'd placed our bets, and I just finished putting my bet on the floor. We played on the floor in the barracks, and they said, okay, that's it. They turn over your other card. I said, wait a minute, we still have two more cards coming. Oh no, this is five card stud. I said, this is a seven card stud. I got two more cards. If I'd have known it was five card stud, I'd never bet. I'm beat on the table. Hey, Rich, that's what they call me. Rich, it's five card. They all sit around there. I was so angry with myself, I got up and marched out of the barracks. I didn't live in the barracks anymore. My rank had made it possible for me to have private housing. And as I walked out of the barracks, I slammed my hand in my fist into my palm of my hand. I said, I'm just going to quit smoking. It's amazing. What a reaction. Well, the next morning, I thought, you know, I need to come to my senses here. I'm not going to quit smoking. I am going to see if I can quit. You know, they say tapering is the worst way to quit. But anyway, I decided I was going to try and taper off and quit. I had one cigarette the first day and another cigarette the next day. So I wrote to my mother in a letter. I said, Dear Mom, I might quit smoking. Well, the third day I didn't have any, fourth day half, and then fifth day I think I had three. And by the time the seventh day I didn't have any, and the eighth day I didn't have any, and on the eighth day, while I was playing ping pong in the rec hall, I said, okay, that's it. I definitely am quitting. Well, I had no idea how tortuous and agonizing the following weeks were going to be. I was a heavy smoker, between two and three packs a day. I would take drags as deep as I could, big, huge drag, as deep into my lungs as I could. My body was absolutely floating nicotine. And as the nicotine started going out of my system, I became a nervous wreck. And inside the crypto center, which, of course, it has no windows. They have to go through two doors. It always seems kind of cramped in there. Always seemed to be that way. I'd be working on a message, and my friends, buddies would come up and say, blow smoke in my face and say, hey, Rich, you can't quit. And I tell you, I wanted to hit them in between the eyes as hard as I could. I wanted to hit the crypto machines. I wanted to hit everything. I thought I was about ready to lose my mind. Well, anyway, during this time, I got a letter from home, and you know what it said, don't you? There's a mother's faith She said, "Son, I am so glad you have quit." If I hadn't, I would have been felt compelled to after that. Well, as the weeks and months rolled by, I found myself attending church at the New Gallery Center on a regular basis. My life was changing, and I began to think more and more about going to college. In fact, I thought maybe I might even study for the ministry. It's amazing, isn't it? One day, the faculty member, religion faculty member from Pacific Union College came to the New Gallery Center when I was there. And by the way, if I understand, Dean, Herbert Douglas will be here next week. Elder Herbert Douglas was there, and I chatted with him, and I told him that I was thinking that I would like to go to PUC and study theology, but that I was very worried about the fact that I understood that theology majors had to take Greek. And Elder Douglas said, "Oh, I don't think you'll have any trouble with it." By the way, I only knew PUC because the choir and the band and, you know, the promotions from the college always came from to Monterey Bay Academy from PUC. And so that's why Pacific Union College was the only college that I had in my mind. And our shifts rotated, I still had work on Sabbath. Well, I got to the place now where I didn't want to work on Sabbath anymore. So I would start changing shifts with other people so I could have Sabbath off. Well, that meant the word got around that Ehrman Richards was going to a Seventh-day Adventist church. So I got a call one day from one of the officers in the squadron, and he said, "You know, I understand that you are going to an Adventist church, and I need to ask you if you would defend the Crypto Center if it was attacked." Just inside the Crypto Center, you go through one door and then you go through another door. Just inside on the wall is a .45 and a machine gun. We called it a grease gun, and we were trained to use these, so if anyone tried to attack the center, we would defend it. Well, I told this officer that if the Crypto Center was attacked, I would defend it, but I would try to avoid taking life. He was satisfied with that. Not too long after that, I turned 21 and was baptized in the New Gallery Center. Big day for me. And as the day approached for going home, I felt a considerable amount of pressure to stay in the Air Force. The 3 years there, apart from the way I've wasted my life character-wise, were very successful. I had received one promotion after another when promotions were essentially frozen. I was a supervisor at the age of 20. I had college, I hadn't even finished high school. I had college graduates working under me. The Lord had given me so many good things. And they offered me a huge bonus to stay in. I said, "No," I said, I want to go home and go to college." And they said, "Well, we'll send you to college. We'll send you to Officers Candidate School." And I must confess, it was very, very tempting because I so thoroughly enjoyed my work. But I knew the Lord had something else for me in mind. And I thanked them. I said, "I'm very grateful. But in my way of thinking, my wandering was over. And I knew I had a new direction that I wanted to go. And even though I had wasted some years, I know that God, in his gracious and merciful ways, had worked things out in an amazing way. I now had the GI Bill to help pay expenses. It's just one glorious result. The Air Force, which some people would have said, you know, first of all, as an Adventist, you ought to wait and be drafted into the Army where you, you know, don't have to worry about carrying arms. But because I had kind of repeatedly taken things into my own hands, I looked back and saw that no matter when I decided to go this way, God took that action and reshaped it. And to this day, I have no doubts but that God overruled repeatedly and turned everything out for the best. Even when I was a freshman at PUC, the CIA asked me twice to work for them. And it was easy to say by this time, no thank you, I'm going to work for the Lord. After graduating from PUC, I came back here for a year, and Jim, in 63, I got the MA, not the... I got the BD later after I was teaching across campus. And then I began pastoring in Northern California, and 3 years later, they told me I was going to be ordained with three others at the Hammond Grove Camp Meeting in Northern California. And Elder James Chase, who was a president, asked the four of us if there was a song we would like to sing at the conclusion of the service. And after no one said anything, I said, if it's all right, I would like for us to sing All to Jesus, I Surrender. Well, Mom and Dad were there, and as we were singing that song, I looked down through my own misty eyes and saw once again tears rushing down my dad's cheeks. I look back with deep gratitude to God for his love to me, his wisdom, his forgiveness, for his rejoicing on my behalf. And as I do so, I realize that the greatest fulfillment in life for me is sharing God's marvelous love with others. And I invite all of you to know that experience too.